This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PADT. Episode 10, 3D Printing, Acquisitions, the Cloud, IoT, and Artificial Intelligence. A group of us get together to make some predictions on the future of simulation and ANSYS's part in the simulation world in the coming year. Welcome to episode 10 of All Things ANSYS, our podcast on things ANSYS. And this is our 10th episode and our final episode for 2017. So we welcome all of you and wish everybody a happy holiday season. And since this will be our last one of the year, we also wish everybody a happy new year going into 2018. Statistics-wise, this morning I checked, we had 1,178 downloads as of this morning. So that's an average of 190 downloads per episode. So that's going up, which is pretty nice. We're almost to 200, which was kind of my goal. So maybe with this one, we'll get to 200 per episode. So it's getting momentum, which is always good to see. We'd love to see more. So please share this with other people you know in the ANSYS world. I got a couple of emails from people, long-term ANSYS people who just discovered. I didn't know you guys had a podcast. So one of the things I'm going to do is market it a little bit more next year so more people know about it. But I asked our listeners to let people know as well. So we'll get the word out there. And the other thing that we're going to try and do after episode 10 here, we wanted to, you know, if you've been listening for a while, you know we're going to try 10 episodes, see how it works, and then get more people involved. So we'll start doing interviews with people outside of PADT, hopefully starting episode 9. I've got a couple of our vendors that are interested in doing it. And hopefully I can get clearance from ANSYS to interview some ANSYS developer folks or product management folks as well and get their opinion on things. So we'll try and grow this that way as well. So today, this is, like I said, this is our 10th episode, and it's our final one of 2017. And what do people do when they have a podcast and it's the end of the year and they don't have anything else to talk about? We talk about what's going to happen in 2018. So that's going to be our topic for today. We're not going to do a year in review show because we weren't doing it all year. But maybe if we're still doing this at the end of 2018, we'll do a year in review and then a future show. So we're going to talk about the world of ANSYS. Where are we headed? Where are we headed with simulation in general, and specifically the growing corner that ANSYS occupies in the world of simulation? And I'll talk about that growing corner when I go through some of the financials. I was looking at the ANSYS data, and they're doing really well. They are definitely growing. So what I really want to know is just kind of, oh, you know what I forgot? We didn't introduce anybody. So why don't we go, I'm gonna change it a little bit. I did that on purpose. I'm going to change it a little bit. I'm going to go around the room, and I want all of you to tell you who you are, you know, what you do here at PADT, your ANSYS involvement, and then just off the top of your head, the most outlandish thing that might happen in 2018 in the world of simulation. It's the craziest thing. So Alex is looking at me like, I'll come back to you. You want me to come back to you?
No,
okay, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, so my name is Alex Grishin. I'm an analysis engineer for PADT in the engineering services department, and I've been doing this for more than 20 years now. So the weirdest thing that I think is going to happen in 2018 in the world of simulation, I think that if I had to boil it down to one word, it would be the cloud.
Okay. Next year's the big year for the cloud.
Yep.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I'm Jim Peters. I'm also in the simulation department, senior staff technologist. Also been doing it over 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. There. it's getting longer. Yeah, the biggest thing I think in 2018 is just addressing products made with rapid manufacturing techniques.
Okay. So 3D
printing, either metal or plastic.
It's okay, you can say what he said. Go ahead, Joe.
Exactly. This is Joe Woodward. I'm a senior mechanical engineer here at PADT. I've been using ANSYS for 21 years. And basically what Alex and Jim said, those were the things I was going to say.
Cool.
Next year.
Going last sucks, but we still got a few more people. Go ahead, Tom.
My name is Tom Chadwick. I'm one of the CFD support engineers here at PADT. And last year was 30 years since I graduated from college. So I've been doing CFD for a little over 30 years now.
Cool.
Yeah, awesome.
And my big thing, I think, is going to be just the expansion that they're doing to Fluent, mm-hmm. and the efforts they're making to make Fluent more of an all-around, all-purpose code.
Okay. Cool.
My name is Ahmed Fayad. I am a IT engineer, and I help in supporting our engineers in IT. I've been with PADT 4 years, playing with Ansys on and off for the whole 4 years. And prediction for the future, I believe that Ansys either is going to buy a competitor, just like everyone else is buying everyone else.
Well, that's an easy.
So not a smart company, but a competitor.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Not just a product.
Like buy MathWorks or something, right, you know, like right. blow it out of the sky. That's yeah. one. Two, I wish and I predict that they do parallel meshing. So you could.
Okay, you just stole my two.
Damn. You were only supposed to have
one. Well, I get to go before you. So this is Ted Harris. I manage our simulation support group here at PADT, also a longtime Ansys user. Now, you said outlandish.
Yes.
So my outlandish prediction is we're going to see drones delivering a self-driving cloud simulation solution on Mars.
I do like that. I like that. I see a new marketing campaign there. Yeah,
with big
yeah.
data.
Yeah. Well, and SpaceX and Elon's companies are heavy Ansys users, so I could actually see them taking Ansys mm-hmm. to Mars. So I think that's a good one. So I'm Eric Miller. I'm one of the owners here at PADT. I've been doing simulation for 31 years using Ansys. I don't really do any real engineering work anymore, so that's good enough. My outlandish prediction is it was going to be a big acquisition. I think something that's going to shock us. Let me preface this with, we know nothing. This in no way is a prediction that should anyway affect anybody's investments in the company. This is just a bunch of engineers who've been using the tool for a long time who are going, what could happen that's going to be a big deal? And we have absolutely no input on this or any feedback on this. Ansys is very secretive about their acquisitions. And, they're really good at that. But that was going to be one of mine, the cloud. And we'll talk about each of these as we go through it. But I think my big out there prediction is that Ansys is going to either launch a product or acquire a product that's totally outside of what they've been doing before. Something that's going to be not just big, but, and as I'll talk, they got a lot of cash to spend, but it's going to be something like, whoa, that's something totally different. Again, this is just me thinking out loud. I have no input to believe that or think that.
Something that's not even simulation?
Well, I think it'll be definitely a simulation. Okay. That's definitely what they do. But it'll be something where we're like, wow, I never thought of that. Okay. I think that that's going to happen. We'll see. Like when they bought Apache, right? That's mm-hmm. a tool that simulates really, really deep down inside microprocessors for power management. That totally blew me away. I didn't see that coming. Didn't know they existed. It was a really cool acquisition. So something like that. So you guys brought up, I think everybody kind of keyed in on a couple of those. Let's start talking about the cloud. Everybody's wanted to do simulation in the cloud for a long time. A lot of people have tried. There's been a lot of abortive attempts. We've seen a little bit of success with it here. We tried our own. We didn't have the big enough momentum and cash to do it, so we didn't quite get over the hump on it. But I think technically we had a really nice solution, but we needed like 100 times more hardware to make it fly. And we've gone with a company called Nimbix that we've chosen to work with, and we've been really happy with them so far. So what are your guys' thoughts on what's going to happen that's going to make the cloud something that's going to be big in 2018? Just go ahead, anybody.
I'll start.
Yeah.
The two main challenges that I feel that a lot of cloud providers are facing with HPC mm-hmm. is it's not the cookie cutter thin client that's running a very thin OpenStack instance that's going to cut it. Mm-hmm. You need very fast interconnect. You need access to the CPU resources. You need access to fast RAM. All that bundled up with licensing, mm-hmm. because the traditional method of cloud, although I don't see it old enough to be called traditional, but the traditional cloud, along with traditional licensing, puts a lot of limitations on what people can do. And engineers, what they do for a living is to simplify people's lives. So if a solution is going to make their lives harder, they're going to resist it as much as they can.
I think it's a really good point. I think that cloud, as most people think of it, which is really oriented towards running database applications, isn't the same as HPC. And I think the vendors out there are getting that, and they have to make changes to make it work, and that's starting to happen. So,
yeah. Well, I think they're going to have internet speeds have to increase, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking the interconnect on the cluster itself,
yeah.
But uploading and downloading kinds of files.
Yeah. But I think
huge.
I think that's true early on, right, in the beginning. And one way of looking at that is that people are misusing it. This is not the way the cloud should be used.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The idea is not to upload and download massive files. The idea is to have everything on the cloud,
yep.
And you shouldn't move anything.
Okay.
So at most, you should only be making, you know, JPEG images or something like that.
Pulling down plots.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we're using VMC and another product.
One of the ways that we and some of our customers overcome the internet speeds and the bandwidth limitations is a product. One of the products is called Nice DCV
mm-hmm.
by Nice Software, recently acquired by Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it does graphic acceleration over very slow networks. So you could go sit in a coffee shop, pop up a screen and work on your model, spin it around, do whatever you need, and submit it all in the cloud, completely isolated from where it's actually.
And you don't
running.
Have to bring the file back. To
exactly, and you're only bringing back moving pixels.
Okay.
Right.
Good. Which basically, as we move forward, we're going to create problems and create solutions to the problems
yes.
that are going to create problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So initially, though, and I take your point that software hasn't been written yet, has it? I mean, the architecture necessary to, I guess, do interactive graphics.
It's working.
On your,
it's
does
working.
That work
it's working.
Okay?
Yeah,
okay.
It's working now.
We have,
yeah.
We use it internally. We have a customer that uses it primarily on their cluster.
No problems.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's sometimes it gets a little grainy. I think when everybody gets home from work and starts running Netflix and you're trying to use it from home, if there's nothing on TV, network TV on a Tuesday night and everybody's using Netflix, it can get a little grainy.
Because again, the idea is to
works.
Leverage the compute power
yeah.
on the cloud,
yeah.
not to have it on your laptop or your desktop. Or your. You should be able to use the cheapest possible
yeah,
laptop
or
yeah. mobile device,
or
even
pad.
right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we've
demonstrated that we've had people test out getting on from their smartphone, from their
okay.
iPhone,
okay.
and be able to watch a solution running and post process on the iPhone.
So I'm going to make another
prediction.
There you go.
That's what has to happen.
I'm going to make another prediction that as the cloud gets better and the graphics get better, that more marriages between engineers and non-engineers will be stressed because the engineer will be doing simulation at the dinner table instead of paying attention to the phone. So I'm just checking my run. Honestly, no. I heard what Junior said. I was just checking my run. It's converging.
Yes.
So what else about the cloud is going to
One thing we haven't talked about is security.
Yes.
It's been one of the barriers for some of our customers on exploring
mm-hmm.
the cloud is, you know, just confidence that their data is going to be secure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right.
And it seems like recently
there
are more assurances that the data is in fact secure, but you know, I'm not an expert to talk about that in more detail.
And that's one of the topics I want to cover in one of the early podcasts next year. We'll get the Nimbix folks on and then get the rest of our team on. Some of the listeners may be aware of the new NIST standard in the U.S. that's required that we're implementing by the end of the year for our customers. It's not for confidential information, but it's for information the government wants kept secure, not basically hacked. And that's going to help a lot, that everybody's going to be either NIST compliant or not NIST compliant. And that's going to help us decide who to work with and who not to. So we're going to have a topic on that. So to keep us from staying on cloud, let's move on to the other topic that everybody kind of agreed was going to be a big deal, which is 3D printing. And I know that some of you guys have looked at 3D SIM or have talked to the 3D SIM folks.
Evaluating it now.
Yeah, evaluating it now. So what's your take on that and how it's going to impact things?
So I think it's going to have a pretty big impact on on what we do, simply because a lot of our customers are moving to additive solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're going to be doing. We're going to get a lot more. I can see through tech support. They're going to be. We're going to start getting questions about, you know, how to actually run the various 3D simulation tools that we have. We're going to have two. We're going to have two big ones, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have what's offered through 3D Sim, which is coming in a service pack, an R19 service pack. It will be, and then there'll be.
That's probably the 3D Sim tech support guy right now.
Yeah. And then there's our own native solution.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a chance to play with the ANSYS native APDL. So definitely, people that are interested should take a look at that. What's your other guys?
It's not
here?
Just APDL. It's
it's in Workbench as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, you're right. So the commands have been added to APDL, and then it's an extension in mechanical as well. I'm showing my age here. If Dan had shown up, he'd be kicking me under the table. Dan always gets mad when I talk about APDL. So our sales guys. What are your other guys' impression on 3D printing? What needs to happen besides the 3D Sim and the ANSYS mechanical APDL stuff?
I think from being the youngest guy at the table.
Okay, rub it in.
I think that one of the challenges that we're going to face with simulation and additive is how to marry them together and bring the bar down to the level of the majority of the makers that are out there today are not traditionally trained engineers.
Good point.
A lot of them got into this by, you know, screwing around with it at college or at high school even. My son's elementary school has 3D printers now.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't expect a teenager or a person who is not traditionally trained to go through the ANSYS learning curve to be able to utilize these tools. So the idea is to marry them, bring the bar down, make it just like we have the Discovery Live,
mm-hmm.
how it's right out the box, you can use it.
And that's the main reason why 3D Sim, I think, was acquired, because their solution is targeted toward the manufacturing community and not the analysis community.
That's a really good point. I was having lunch with a senior guy at a very large aerospace company who shall remain nameless, who I was kind of doing my pitch on. Well, you know, we can simulate this stuff now. And he said, I don't want to hear about it until my manufacturing engineer can do it as just part of his standard practice, where step four is run a simulation and see what the shrinkage is. And that it needs to be that easy. Manufacturing is not like design, where they're going to have dedicated people or they're going to make it a significant part of the process.
Yeah, and although I can't verify this personally yet because I haven't driven it myself, mm-hmm. but I'm going to, that is what 3D Sim is supposed to offer.
Good.
In fact, they're supposed to, I think, looking at the broader ANSYS picture of this, users are going to have the ability to simulate additive manufacturing at every level.
Yes.
There's the level that Eric just mentioned, where you just push a button and some preset options are there for you. Then all the way up to the level of you need to do a detailed R&D type of study.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ANSYS native package is probably going to be better for that.
Yeah, and there's some microstructure stuff coming along as well with 3D Sim, which is a different product from them that gets into that low level as well.
Are we talking metals only or plastics too?
No, plastics too. But metal, the emphasis is always on metals.
The need right now is people are making hardware that's gonna have load on it in metal right now.
So, right.
Yeah. And the shrinkage is an issue.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
Right.
That
right.
ability to simulate what you're actually going to build versus what it,
how
it turns out and design it backwards so that
essentially the same
shrinkage comes out right.
The same issues exist whether you're dealing with metals or plastics, but plastics have inherently more issues regarding their material properties.
Yep.
It really has nothing to do with the process.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the material.
It's not fully dense and
right.
It's very path dependent. Although the carbon, one of the reasons why we like carbon 3D for production, which you guys, the listeners will hear about more as we bring that on. It's a new technology that allows you to do 3D printing, and it uses an actual two-part epoxy rather than extruding through a nozzle. So you get a fully dense part. And so that's why we can do production with it. That's why we can make functional parts with it. We don't have to worry about the isotropic material properties.
I thought it was just the speed.
Yeah. And it's fast.
Yeah.
It's fast.
Yeah.
But that's what the marketing people like to talk about. And then we start digging into it. We're like, wait a second. This part's not going to delaminate. This part's not going to have voids in it. I can actually make real parts out of this. Yeah. So that's what got us really excited about it. So we'll talk about that more next year as well. So 3D printing's big, cloud's big. What kind of acquisitions? Just guessing with no input. Who you said one of the big boys out there was bigger than Ansys, MathWorks.
Yeah. I just threw that out there.
What else do you guys think? Anything?
What if the reverse happens? What if Ansys gets acquired?
That could in today's market, anybody can get acquired at any point.
Large company like GE, for example.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a rumor
to do that.
Yeah, it's always a rumor out there. Ansys is very expensive right now, so I don't know if anybody would buy them. But what technology? Like, what holes would you? Here's a good question for you: if you were given a budget to go acquire companies and fill holes in the Ansys suite, what would you? Like, I'd acquire a civil code. Not because it's good for business, but I'm tired of civil engineers using like 40-year-old software, but they need the code checking that comes with those tools. So using Ansys with the code checking, I think would be fantastic for the build industry. I don't think that's a very profitable business, but it'd be nice to have.
It is kind of interesting because that is something that Ansys has historically not paid any attention to.
Yeah, because they don't pay money for anything. They want to pay $4,000, and they never want.
Well, it gets,
and they never pay for maintenance.
Well, a question that's frequently asked is: are there libraries for this, that, and the other that come with Ansys? So, for example, customers will often ask for standard material libraries, but in the civil world, they'll ask for things like standard beam sections.
Yes.
And so, you could acquire a civil code that comes with those. And it is interesting because from a development standpoint, it's not hard to do.
No.
But it just never paid attention to it.
The value there.
But what you said makes me think of maybe just some way to add a large volume of material properties to their portfolio.
Yeah.
Testing.
Absolutely.
Buy
MathWeb.
Buy some kind of company that's got a database of materials.
Didn't the competitor buy MathWeb?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Somebody did. Autodesk or somebody bought them. Yeah, I can't
remember. But actually, that
Autodesk buys everybody.
Yeah.
And one thing they could end up buying that would probably help them out a lot is a company that's a dedicated job scheduler. They've developed their own internal tool called RSM that can do a lot of that kind of stuff, and EKM. But they're all homegrown products, and it's similar. I've seen other companies, CAD softwares, do it with their own database software. They buy their own, they build their own internal database software, but it's never quite as good as a dedicated
batch scheduler.
I
would put my name in that hat. I think it would just make life a lot easier for everybody if they said, okay, we're going to buy this batch scheduler. I don't care which one. It's going to be our standard that comes with all of our tools. And now everybody has that rather than reinventing that wheel. I agree.
Yeah. I think for me, if I was going to get a budget, I'd be going after just database compression, results compression. The more and more, capability of different types of simulation you do, it just makes data storage a bigger and bigger issue. And I think that's one of the biggest things that hold the cloud providers at bay is
the disk space we're going to run out of space
to offer. You might get one or two customers, and then you don't have enough disk space to offer anymore to anybody else. And
I've often said a simulation engineer's job is to utilize all computer resources, all the RAM, all the disk space, use it all up.
Fill that void.
Perfect. Yeah, I hope Nimbix doesn't kick Ansys out of there.
they're very dedicated to Ansys. We actually met with them last week, and they're very happy with
that's,
their Ansys.
That's an interesting
they
concept
get it.
Regarding data management, because one of the big leaps that happened in enterprise data, like traditional IT, was the concept of deduplication, where they would go at the block level and look at the blocks and basically store a single copy of identical blocks and use pointers.
Yeah.
And that works perfectly for email, for documents, for things like that. It's terrible
For quick database access, yeah.
Or quick data sets.
Yeah.
But for archiving, it greatly reduces the space. Maybe Ansys can do something like that.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. And you got me thinking about two things that no one mentioned. So I do a lot of work with startups and a lot of mentoring, and I listen to a lot of pitches. I do that stupid Shark Tank thing, which I'm not a huge fan of, but that's the way it works these days. Every company that I hear from outside the simulation space talks about two things that we didn't mention: Internet of Things and artificial intelligence / machine learning. Where do you think Ansys is going to be in those two? Let's talk about IoT. Ansys, virtual twins is a great application for Ansys. It's a great way to play. We have several customers we're working with on it, modeling their hardware in Ansys instead of in the real world to design their IoT solution and then optimize their IoT solution. What do you guys think about that?
It's a good fit.
Maybe that's why it kind of seems obvious. I think that's maybe why we're not even. Yeah.
The problem I always have as an engineer is that we're all kind of conservative in terms of technology things. So even though we love new toys, we always get worried about. I can visualize the problems of having your refrigerator connected to the internet and somebody hijacking your refrigerator and taking the temperature controls and fluctuating.
Spoiling your milk.
Just because they can.
Just because they can. So.
Yeah, where we're seeing it is not on the consumer side. I think there's a lot of hype on the consumer side. We're seeing it, our customers on the industrial side. So customers that make equipment, say mining or manufacturing or aerospace, they want their systems to have sensors and they want to get data.
So Eric, wasn't it just earlier this year you were at the Smart House?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did a Smart House thing. And it was very much oriented towards the kitchen and the living room. It was the home thing. And I kept on thinking, it's industrial.
Well, here's a market that I actually had a serious conversation about. A friend of mine works in the vacation rental business. And it's a huge market to automate those homes.
Yes, yes.
So the person renting the place can turn off the AC and make sure that the previous tenant didn't leave the dishwasher running or whatever. He can shut all of these things down remotely, check with cameras, make sure that it's all out, and get out the door. So it is moving into reality, but the gigantic challenge is, do you want to put an IoT lock on your front door? Do you want to do IoT to watch your children? Or, you know, those IoT watches for kids. I'm like, oh, these are nice, but no.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of issues to be
over. The privacy issues on the consumer side, that's why we see our industrial customers embracing it and using Ansys for it, whereas the commercial side, the big way I see it used on the commercial side is antenna design. So HFSS, we've seen a lot of people buying HFSS to design the antennas for IoT because they have no room to put an antenna on a watch or in a camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one of the things interesting is thinking back to a commercial I saw a few weeks ago about, I think it's IBM has got their smart systems, and they're talking about the elevator that monitors itself and figures out it's going to need maintenance in 2 weeks and calls the repair company itself and says, hey, send somebody over. I know this part's going to break in 2 weeks.
And simulation fits into that loop.
And simulation fits into that loop very well, is to have a system that can monitor itself, monitor critical points in the part or in the parts and say, hey, this part is showing that it's near its end of life. Come replace it.
So do you guys think that Ansys simulation would be part of that IoT loop? Not designing the IoT devices. It's already, everybody is doing IoT devices is using simulation to design those devices. That's standard today. But do you think simulation would be part of that loop, that diagnostic
I think
loop?
That's what they hope, is that's their goal.
But it depends on how successfully we're able to model things like faults, predict faults, in a circuit.
I mean, they've been talking a lot at Ansys about reduced order modeling.
Yeah.
And that's system a big level. Part of it, is just system level monitor every, model every part and reduce that down to a set of curves so you can say, well, if the temperature gets above this level, that's going to reduce the life of this part by this much.
And now make a decision based.
Now make a decision.
All the building blocks are there within Ansys, and running Ansys in the background is really nothing new. I mean, we did that for a customer 10 or 15 years ago, right? Where the their customers go to a web portal and put in some specs, and behind the scenes it builds an ANSYS model and does a simulation and displays the results.
Yeah, but we didn't know to call it IoT back then, or digital twin back then.
Damn it.
Yeah. So I will predict that we'll have like a handful of real good success stories of IoT in the diagnostic loop using simulation. But it's mainstream as far as the design of IoT, but in that loop, I think we'll have you know, maybe a dozen really good case studies next year, I hope, because I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, I think it hinges on that. The success hinges on good case studies, mm-hmm. good success mm-hmm. stories in that field.
Yeah. It's starting to happen. So the last thing, the other thing I brought up was artificial intelligence and expert systems. And this may be beyond 2018. What do you think the role of expert systems in simulation? I'm using the old term. We don't call it expert systems anymore. We call it machine learning. Apologize. I'm old. And I was told that we don't use – I went to a discussion with some people I know that are also interested in this topic outside of simulation, and they yelled at me, no one uses Lisp anymore. So those years I learning Lisp are useless now. They do it with Python and C++. But what do you guys think the role of simulation or of machine learning and simulation will be?
Well, I think you could definitely get to a point where, like you said, you'd have a system that was capable of building its own ANSYS model.
Okay.
So if you had a specific
the pre-processing
and the running and the post-processing, okay. You develop a machine learning system that would say, given this standard class of part, I can build a model for that. Apply the loads that I know or that I see from my own sensors that I gather data, mm-hmm. set some boundary conditions, run the model, and then get a result that says, hey, this part's going to fail. Mm-hmm. And then warn people. And that's the artificial intelligence of it, is that it's capable of taking its inputs that it gathers itself, running a model, and then flagging it.
Automating that whole process. So that's way in the future.
Yeah.
Well, that's not even next year.
Yeah, but even before that, give it a CAD model and you tell it where the loads are,
so
then it learns how to mesh and how to get merge results and all of that.
Discovery Live is already, it's a meshless system. So you basically...
Well, one issue with that is what's called machine learning, quote unquote, is really just regression analysis, a Bayes theorem applied to regression analysis. So it's statistical. It requires a lot of examples. That's right. So to develop a system like that, you'd have to build a lot of models, and it would have to. So that's why I say it's not happening next year. It's not happening the year after.
ANSYS customers may need to be willing to share their model building data with ANSYS anonymously, of course, it would be randomized and assigned.
Yeah, and we come back to the cloud.
Here's the thing. If you think about AI and machine learning, if you look at the big industries, mm-hmm. bearings, for example, everybody in the industry is using 5 or 6 types of bearings. Mm-hmm. And if you can develop enough, if you can collect enough data about this specific part, you're not looking at simulating the entire model. But you can say, oh, I'm doing this rotational device and this much load, drop a bearing in, it's already meshed, it's already there, it can predict, it can, you know, pull in all the information that it needs to take care of that part of the solution, and then you can build around it and use your expertise there. That way it becomes, a drag and drop. Eventually, years in, it becomes like a web app where you go and from a drop down, you select your different pieces.
Yeah,
you're set.
Let me turn that into a question for all of you, and I'll get you guys each of yours vote on this, because this is really interesting. I'm not saying in 2018, but when we do simulation and we look at models and we make decisions as human trained engineers on how to build that model, let's just stick with the building part of that model. Our expertise goes into building that model. That much less expertise is required than was when we all started.
Right.
Because it's just easy use, but it's not using artificial intelligence or machine learning. Do you, each of you, think that in the future that will be automated using machine learning and other forms of artificial intelligence so that it will be just a drag and drop? The simulation engineer, those of us around the table will be replaced by algorithms.
Right. So I'm gonna go with the classic John Swanson answer to that.
Yes.
For a class of problems. Sure. Okay. For a certain class of problems.
That's a smart answer, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a natural extension to what every company does that builds a common set of products where they try to do process automation. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a natural extension to say that if you've gone through all the effort to set the parameters of what your product needs to be and how it's analyzed and how it's done, you certainly could take it all the way to having it just keep going and do it all for you.
Yeah, so, I don't think it's going to come down to AI learning that stuff, but as more and more programmed, our information is programmed into it, like you said, everything's gotten easier to use over the years. So we'll you used to have decisions. A PhD and write your own elements and all this stuff, and now it's, okay, you know, new college hires, here's a training course for 3 days, work through it, they can build a model and go from there.
So not fully replace, but definitely streamline using.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think eventually what's going to happen is that, as Alex said, for a standard class of problems that are well understood, we can already be replaced mm-hmm. by some standard curves.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's always going to be the problem. The reason they will always need simulation engineers, because there's always going to be that one special class of, God, why did that break? That shouldn't have broken. What happened? And those are the questions that they're always going to need people like us. But for a lot of the simple stuff, you know, if you want to calculate the life of a part, I think there's enough data out there for a standard, you know, a beam or a bracket or mm-hmm. anything like that. If you've built 50,000 bearings of multiple different types, you know exactly your ability to predict how that bearing is, what its life is going to be, is pretty good for a standard load. Okay. Again, that's the other problem. Okay. The part may be standard, but the loading is not always standard.
And the tables that you need, for example, the data that you need is not always available.
Right.
That's often one of our biggest obstacles.
That's where IoT comes in.
Right. I don't know how to put it. Some of the stuff is just, I don't know, it's either classified or proprietary.
Right. So we're going to be moving up the value. I'll wait for my answer. And make my question. All right, go ahead. What's your vote?
So, yes, and I would take an extremely simplistic view because I don't know all the math that you guys do. if you think about it in terms of Legos, mm-hmm. you have standard building blocks, and you can create really awesome things with them using certain special pieces that are specific to this set. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, it's a problem-specific challenges will have to be solved by trained engineers, but the generics, you know, a car suspension or, you know, disc brakes or whatever, the science is there. It's not going to be drastically different. You could use, you know, copy and paste something that's been tested, tried, mm-hmm. and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Ted?
I think the possibilities are really just beyond what we can imagine. And the reason I think that is, you know, we live in the East Valley here in the Phoenix area, and, you know, it's a hotbed for testing self-driving cars. I mean, we're at the point now where multiple times a day you see them driving around, right? You don't even think about it.
We see them everywhere here.
So who among us would have imagined...
By the way, they're always being driven.
Well, starting to not have drivers.
Yes, they're starting to not have drivers.
Starting to not have someone behind the wheel.
Yep.
But who among us would have imagined just 2 or 3 years ago that they would be ubiquitous?
That's a really good point. I would have told you no. I would have said no. It's way off. It's decades away.
Right, and I take a different view. That's been promised forever and still isn't here. I'll believe it when I see it is basically mine.
So I was over at AJ's, and I saw one come into the parking lot. The guy was not touching the steering wheel. I came into the parking lot, found a parking space, and parked without him touching the wheel.
Yeah.
So it's getting close. I'm gonna say this. My prediction is that, what we do today, the vast majority of the simulation that we do today in 15 to 20 years is going to be fully automated using a host of tools, but a lot of artificial intelligence. And that engineers that we now consider simulation engineers are going to move up that value chain And we're going to be, of course, developing those algorithms, but also doing much more difficult problems that we wouldn't even think of doing today.
Exactly.
Because compute power and the automation is there.
The problems are going to be different.
So stay in school, kids. There is a future if you love simulation. It's just going to look a little bit different, just like it looks different than when we all graduated.
And you could be doing it on Mars.
And you could be doing it on Mars. That's right. Does anybody else have any other future predictions before we close it out this discussion? This has been a lot of fun. Anything else you want to throw out there? I think we covered it. All right, so we will write these down, and hopefully, if we're still doing the podcast at the end of next year, we'll come back and visit and see how close we were on the 2018 predictions. So I thank everybody for doing that. All right, that was a fantastic discussion, and we're going to go ahead and take a sponsor break right now and hear a little bit about more about some of the things that we do here at PADT and how we can help you do what you do.
Hi there. Eric Miller here to talk in a little more detail about a topic we bring up a lot in these podcasts, customizing ANSYS products to automate processes or add functionality. A significant portion of PADT's consulting work in the simulation world is working with customers to write custom software that sits on top of or even inside various ANSYS products. These programs can connect a legacy solver, import proprietary boundary conditions, or implement a new material model or custom fluid behavior. But most of the time, we work to write vertical applications that automate and standardize a specific customer simulation process. From chip packaging to family of parts simulation to turbine wheel geometry optimization, we can work with your team to provide productivity improvements that can make things up to 10 times faster than the current process. To learn more, contact us at info@padtinc.com or call 480-813-4884 and ask about ANSYS customization and automation. A little bit of programming can create an order of magnitude change in productivity.
Okay, welcome back. We don't have a lot of news and events to talk about, so I'll go through this pretty quickly. This is a normal part of our podcast, but at the end of the year here, not a lot's going on. So we don't have anything actually scheduled for the final 2 weeks of the year, but we do have our two Discovery Live webinars planned for February and March. And do check our calendar, and we'll talk about it here for some other events on other ANSYS products. But those are already on the calendar. We really want to get Discovery out there and get people to know it. Those of us who are involved in the sales of ANSYS will all be gathering for the annual sales kickoff in January. So hopefully we'll have lots of cool things that we will learn at that we'll share with you. But that's kind of a big event every year. It gets to get everybody in the ANSYS sales family together to talk about what happened and what's going to happen. So we'll share what we can from that when we get back. Also want to note, last time we mentioned this, and I want to note it again, we're hiring quite a few people here at PADT, and I wanted everybody out there in the podcast to know about it. There's 6 positions open right now. We just filled a sales position in Colorado, so those of you who are customers up there will get to know Eric, not me, but a new Eric, who's going to be up in our Colorado office. But we still have 6 openings. We're looking for an accounting specialist here in Tempe. Also in Tempe is we need an executive assistant, that especially one that's used to working with a technical company. We are hiring an ANSYS account manager for ANSYS in Southern California, Utah, or Austin, Texas. So we're growing outside of the state of Arizona quite a bit, and we need more people. And again, that's an ANSYS account rep in Southern California, Utah, and Austin, Texas. The application engineer position for low frequency in Southern California is still open. So we're really looking for somebody, especially if they have some motor or solenoid background. Do let your friends know about that. It's fun to work at PADT. If you like what you do but don't like where you work, consider us. We need, on the 3D printing side, we still have 2 openings. We need an inside sales representative here in Tempe. And also in Austin, Texas, we're looking for a salesperson for 3D printing sales. So let everybody know about that. Okay, let's talk about the financial side of things first before we get into the other news that's going on. So the stock is still sitting at a pretty high level at $148 a share. That's a 55% increase over the past 52 weeks. And the market cap is sitting, if you do the math, is at $12.6 billion. So that's when we talked about acquisitions. It's a big fish to swallow for somebody. They do have, according to Yahoo Finances, $926 million in cash. So they do have their coffers full to go to war. And something else, when I was poking around the financials, I didn't realize this, but Vanguard, if you look at who's invested in ANSYS, they have $1 billion worth of ANSYS. It's 10% of the outstanding stocks. And then BlackRock, which is also is the largest financial management company out there, is 8.3% at $853 million. So these are two really well-regarded and liked investment groups, considered good long-term investors who know what they're doing. And they've got 18% of ANSYS stock out there. So it's a good sign. It means that we're going to be around for a while, and ANSYS is going to have lots of money to hire more developers. So we're really excited about that. News-wise, again, not too much. It's January, or December. So the only thing that was on the ANSYS news site is they did a really cool press release about how Ferrari is using ANSYS to win. Take a look at that. It's if you like cars at all, if you like ANSYS at all, and if you like cars and ANSYS, it's really cool. It's a great application to just, in Formula One especially, they push the edge to such an extent, and to see how they use ANSYS is really cool. Blog post-wise, there's a really neat article, I think it was out of UC Riverside on the ANSYS blog, talking about how they use Fluent to see if trees help air quality near roads. I will not be a spoiler and let you know what the answer is. Check that one out. Then Wim Slagner, who works for ANSYS, wrote a nice article on their blog also about some advice on cloud computing, something we talked about a lot today. Over on our blog at padtinc.com/blog, we have a really cool article from Ziad, who just joined our team in California as an application engineer. And he had to transition back into the world of ANSYS. He had used it in college, and we hired him. So he's got some neat observations, somebody kind of re-emerging into the ANSYS world. And there's a neat perspective. So read that. And then Ted also wrote a really nice piece that's getting a lot of shares out there on social media and likes about something he learned back in college and that he was reminded of recently here at work, is that without risk, there can be no progress. So we all need to take risk out there. So we can't move forward. So I want to thank everybody again for listening. We look forward to doing more of this in 2018. I'm going to have everybody go around the table and say goodbye. This is your chance to make your 2017. Those of you who haven't been here before, what we do is you say goodbye, and then you also have to share a joke, a word of wisdom, or some clever lesson that you'd like to pass on to folks. So, Alex?
Thanks for having me, and goodbye, everyone. And all I can say is measure twice, build once.
There you go. Very good. I like that.
It's a classic.
Will always be true.
Yeah, this is Jim, and again, farewell, everyone. Hope everyone has a good 2018. Words of wisdom, boy, I don't know. Truth never changes, it's only discovered.
There you go. Did somebody famous say that, or did you try that?
I don't know.
That's a good one.
Jim Peters.
I can't. Yeah, but Jim Peters, okay, it's going to be a meme now.
Yeah. This is Joe. Goodbye, everyone. Have a good new year, and go watch Star Wars again.
Yeah.
I'm sure you missed something in the first time.
Very good advice.
This is Tom. Goodbye. I hope everybody has a good holiday. And two short things. One, in CFD, remember, mesh is critical. And two, please remember the reference pressure.
So Tom does a lot of tech support. Obviously, this has come up a couple times recently.
If you're paying.
Please remember.
All right, this is Ahmed. Hope everybody has good holidays. Happy New Year. Stay safe. Be careful driving. Mm-hmm. Piece of advice before you shut down for the end of the year, take a backup. Anything that you're not willing to lose, put on a USB stick, keep it at home or something. Just for the weekend. We don't know what's hidden. And some lock
good advice.
This is Ted. I'll close mine with a recommendation to crawl, walk, run when it comes to your simulations. Start with something simple. Make sure you understand it, then add the complexity.
And this is Eric, and I want to thank everybody for attending and for listening to these 10 podcasts so far that we've done. It's really been a lot of fun. I hope you can tell how much we enjoy the discussions. And oftentimes I have to find myself kind of trying to reel it back in because I know we'll be here for like 4 hours. And exciting as it is to us, in a 20 to 30 minute bit, 3 hours might not be exciting to you guys. So we do really enjoy it and we appreciate you listening. Do consider sending some business our way. That's why we're actually doing it in the long run. So you know, we're here to help. We're here to help you not just with your ANSYS, selling you ANSYS, but supporting you and helping you learn it better, mentoring, training, as well as all the other things we do here at PADT, including 3D printing and product development. So a little bit of an ad there at the end. My advice is, make some New Year's resolutions that you can stick with, and one of them should be to pick one thing technical that you don't know and learn it in 2018. You should always do that. There's always new stuff to do out there. So again, thank you for 10 episodes, and we look forward to the future, and we'll see you in 2018. Thank you for joining us for our 10th episode of the All Things ANSYS podcast. We really did enjoy making these predictions and hope it got all of our listeners thinking about what is coming in 2018. As a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. This is especially true of when we were talking about potential acquisitions. We were guessing. Don't make any decisions based upon what we were saying. For more information, visit www.padtinc.com/blog, and please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.